We're going to finish our introduction to stocks with various types of different common stocks, stock market capitalization, and then a discussion of some of the different stock strategies. So let's start on slide 75 with the different types of common stocks. People tend to lump all stocks together. And the truth is, nothing is further from the truth than lumping all stocks together. What I hope to inculcate, you like that word, inculcate, in you, get you to understand how to do it, is to identify different types of companies by their characteristics of risk versus return. Because all stocks in general are risky, but some are a whole lot more risky than others. And we're starting with the least riskiest, and those are the blue chip stocks and the income stocks. Blue chip stocks are financially strong, high quality stocks with long and stable records of earnings and dividends. They are often, but not always, referred to as value stocks. And they tend to attract conservative investors. Now, this has nothing to do with politics, folks. Conservative, liberal, no. These are people who want to invest in stocks, but don't want to lose 80% of their value. And so we take a look at some examples. General Electric and General Motors. For years, these two companies were considered bluest of the blue chips, but General Electric almost went through a near-death experience, and General Motors did die in the 2008-2009 turmoil. The new GM is a totally different company than the old GM, as far as investors are concerned. For people who buy their vehicles, it doesn't look any different than it did before. But no, GM went through bankruptcy, and the people who own GM stock lost everything. And General Electric went through a very serious time in the 2008-09 turmoil. Why? Because people don't realize how diversified General Electric is and was. And in 2007, they were making more money off of their financial businesses than they were off of their industrial businesses. Where does the term blue chip come from? Well, believe it or not, it comes from gambling. Because before the 1920s or so, the only people who owned stocks were gentlemen. You know, remember the aristocrats? And gentlemen gambled. That's what a gentleman did. And the blue chips were the most expensive chips. Hence the term blue chip stocks. Uh-huh. Yeah. Income stocks are stocks with long and sustained records of paying higher than average dividends. Again, you may hear these referred to as value stocks. And they are normally slow growth companies in mature industries. The poster child for income stocks are utility stocks. Exactly. Are utilities going anywhere, folks? No. Are people going to start taking cold showers in the dark? No. But are they going to explode on the upside? No, neither of that. They're very staid. Add to this list the banks. Until the late 1990s, when banks started doing things that they really had no business doing and caused the great turmoil of 2008 and 2009. But someday, hopefully soon, banks will go back to being boring and stodgy. Let's hope. Slide number 76, growth stocks. Oh, these are the stars. The stocks with the beautiful hair and teeth and the very thin and they're on the cover of GQ and Vogue and Vanity Unfair. These are stocks that experience high rates of growth in operations and earnings. Typically 15 to 20% or higher. And that may not sound like much, but if you're growing at 20%, in 3 years, you're going to be twice your weight. They are often associated with high P/E ratios. Usually there's no dividends or a very small token amount. And why is that? Because the earnings are being reinvested back into the company. The profits are being put back into the company. Assuming that the company continues to grow, the stock price should go up. But these are going to be some of the most volatile stocks out there. And some examples are Intel, Microsoft, HP. Wait a minute. Are Intel, Microsoft, and Hewlett-Packard still growth stocks? Not like they were 20 years ago, no. They've become stodgy, boring blue chip stocks. Who are the growth stocks now? Who are the stocks with the gorgeous teeth and the six-pack abs and gorgeous $200 haircuts? Apple, Google, Farcebook, Titter. What is it called? Twitter! The social networking stocks. Those are now the growth stocks. Everybody loves the growth stocks. Problem is, many of these investors don't just watch the first derivative, they watch the second derivative. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it, because that's for us, for those of us who like calculus and math. They're not only looking at how fast the company is growing, but how fast the growth is accelerating. That's the second derivative, the acceleration. Relax, you don't have to know this, And at the slightest hint of the growth slowing, they're still growing, but the growth is slowing. The second derivative starts to even out or go negative, even though the company may still be growing. People will dump the shares and the price will fall. Very volatile. Slide 77. Now, we've been using these terms growth and value. And you're going to run up against them, folks, because the investment world loves to use the terms growth and value. But the meaning of the terms are not exact. Typically, investors often use growth to designate a high P/E stock, while they use value to denote a low P/E stock. But here's the problem. A high P/E stock might be a great value, while a low P/E stock might be not a very good value. And here's a tremendous example. In January of 2005, Google was selling for around $200 with a sky-high P/E. I think it was 70, 68 or something like that. While the old GM was selling for $34 with a very low P/E, I think 5 or 6, and paying very rich dividends, by the way. Today, Google sells for about $1,100. Now, that's split adjusted. If you go look it up, it won't be $1,100. They split stock 2-for-1. With a much lower P/E. The old GM stock, which is now referred to as Motors Liquidation, if you can believe that, that's what they changed the old GM stock name to, last sold for 4 cents in March of 2011. And now is worthless. So which one was the better value? Do not fall into the trap of simply always using growth for high P/E and value for low P/E. A high P/E stock might be a good value, it might not be. A low P/E stock might be a good value, it might not be. Slide number 78. Cyclical stocks. Are these round stock? No, cyclical. These are stocks whose earnings and overall market performance are closely linked to the general state of the economy. These stocks will follow the business cycle of advances and declines. And the poster child for this type of stock are automobiles, car companies. You follow the car company stocks, and they do great when the economy is doing well. Why? People are getting new jobs, they're getting raises. What is the first thing they do? They run out and buy a new car. Don't ask me why they do that. How's the old car? It doesn't matter. I want a new car. I like that new car smell. When the economy doesn't do so well, people are losing their jobs, wages aren't rising. What do people do? I'm very happy with old Bessie. Thank you very much. She's good. She's good to me. But the truth is, any company that makes stuff, materials, such as steel and timber, chemicals, and now computer chips and other types of technology have become cyclical stocks. Because when the economy does well, there's more stuff being built, and that means not only do they need chemicals and steel and timber, they also need chips, because everything's got a chip in it now these days. The other side of this coin are the defensive stocks. These are stocks that tend to hold their own and sometimes even do well when the economy starts to falter. Huh? How could you find a stock that remains stable during declines in the market? Well, it's very easy. Buy a food company. Buy a company that makes toothpaste. Kellogg's makes cornflakes. Procter & Gamble makes Crest and Pampers and Tide. Because do you eat more cornflakes because the economy is doing really well? Do you eat fewer cornflakes because the economy is doing well? No, you need to eat. Drug companies are often very defensive because it doesn't matter what's happening. You need your insulin, you take your insulin. And you don't take more because the economy is doing well. So traders, speculators, will often get out of the cyclicals, get out of the growth companies, and move into the defensive stocks when it looks like the economy is faltering. And that's the reason why defensive stocks are counter-cyclical. When everybody's partying up a storm and the economy's going bang gangbusters, who wants to own a food company? You see? Indeed. Slide number 79. Now, a few more that we need to add to our list, but they're not as important, are the turnarounds, asset plays, and the penny stocks. Turnaround stocks, I like to refer to them as goners. These are companies that have fallen on hard times, and what you have to ask yourself, is there potential for a rebound? In the early 1980s, many of you weren't even born yet, but Chrysler almost went bankrupt. They literally almost disappeared. There's a gentleman by the name of Lee Iacocca, who originally started at Ford and was responsible for the Ford Mustang, took over Chrysler and turned it around. So the price had fallen down to about $3 from 40-something, and within 3 years he had got the company back up, and it was back up into the 40s. So there's a potential for great returns, and there's a potential that the company will disappear. So who are the turnaround stocks now? Ford and GM from the Great Recession. And it looks like they've turned themselves around pretty well. You might want to look up Sears, Kmart. I don't know, folks. I don't know. The guy who runs Sears, Kmart, they're one company, by the way, is doing his best. At least that's what he says, but other people think he's a goofball. And it doesn't look like they're going to turn around. Asset plays are companies that are sitting on assets that could be sold or spun off. And for example, in the late 1990s, early 2000s, many of the old retail establishments, the department stores, literally were disappearing, falling by the wayside. Montgomery Ward's, the Broadway, Robinson's May, and they got together and then fell apart. And JCPenney's was in trouble. Why? Because they were being hit from below by the Walmarts and the Costcos and the Targets, and they were being hit from above by the specialty needless markups and Nordstrom's or whatever they're called. But what people did not realize is that JCPenney's had an insurance division. They still have it. It's very profitable. It's the company that sells people insurance they don't need. That could easily have been sold to raise cash to have kept the company afloat. So that's a situation where you really have to dig deeper than what is on the surface of the face of the company. You see the face of the company, but when you dig a little deeper, you go, oh, there's other things that are here. Our last one on this slide are penny stocks. And really, folks, we shouldn't even discuss penny stocks in polite company, because these are the flim-flams of the world, the butterfly.com, that are populating the bulletin boards, the OTC markets, used to be called the pink sheets. And in the face-to-face class, we would take a look at some examples. If you get involved in investing, you're going to see these things because they're going to try to sell them to you. Stay away because they're scams, and you're guaranteed to pretty much lose money. By the way, if you took a look at the Casa de Cambio, the spreads on these penny stocks are enormous. They might be selling you the stock for 7 cents, but they'll buy it back for 4 cents. And you say, well, that's only 3 cents. But it's almost 50% of the value of the stock. You see how 3 cents is a huge amount when you're dealing with penny stocks? And you might not even be able to find somebody who will buy it from you at 4 cents. Stay away from penny stocks, folks. Slide number 80. Our last type of common stock are foreign stocks, also called international stocks. Traditionally, it was difficult to impossible to transact, but not anymore. Most brokerage firms now have global accounts where you can buy and sell security stocks, in our case we're talking about stocks, on other exchanges around the world, on London's exchange, or Hong Kong's, or Frankfurt's, or Mexico. But before this, most people who wanted to invest in foreign stocks did so through American Depository Receipts, ADRs. And sometimes you'll see GDRs. What happened? Well, a big bank or trust company in New York would go to Japan and buy up a ton of Sony stock or Toyota stock. They would then bring them back to New York and reissue them in dollars, dollar denominated. And so when you buy Sony on the New York Stock Exchange, you're buying Sony using dollars. And when you sell it in dollars. But with the advent of these global accounts, you can actually change your dollars into yen and buy Sony on the Tokyo Exchange. Traditionally, most people didn't even do that. They would just buy their stocks through global and international mutual funds. And as we said, remember, global means everyone, including the United States. International, also called foreign, everyone except the United States. So don't forget that. Now, whenever you buy issues, stocks, whatever, bonds, outside the United States, you have to keep in mind the effect of currency. Because with nothing else happening, all other things being equal, and of course they never are, if the dollar becomes stronger, your investment overseas immediately becomes worthless. And if the dollar becomes weaker, your investment overseas, outside the United States, immediately becomes worth more. Now, this should not be the tail that wags the dog. It should not be your primary concern. But there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to guess incorrectly where the currencies are going to move. And if you can guess correctly, which some people may be able to do for a short period of time, you can make a lot of money. What you have to ask yourself is, will the dollar be stronger or weaker in the coming years? And for years, the dollar had been falling, not collapsing, as some people said, but falling. And why is that? It's because we were importing about two-thirds, 66% of our oil. Hundreds of billions of dollars every year was leaving the United States. And we tend to think about the those stupid little things we buy from China, but no, it was oil that was the big account deficit. And now we are producing far more oil than we did. And what's happened? The dollar's gotten stronger. So if you talk to people who have been investing globally over the long term, they will say the currency issues tend to wash out. Don't let anybody tell you the dollar is going to collapse. Everything's going to collapse eventually, folks. 10,000, 100,000 years, I don't know. But you can't bank on that happening because you won't be able to collect. Because if the dollar collapsed, it means the whole global economy has fallen apart. Now, there are people who are saying that the dollar is not going to be as important as it was in the future. And they're right. We're going to have to get used to a world where we're not king of the hill anymore. We're going to have to compete more on a more direct basis as peers, not as looking down upon the rest of the world. But I think that's a good thing. It'll take some of the pressure off the dollar and help us in the long term. I think, because that makes it cheaper for our companies to do business outside the United States. We'll see. Slide 81, market capitalization. Another topic that we have danced around, but now we're going to hit it head on. It's actually a very simple calculation. You take the current price of the stock times the number of shares outstanding, and that gives you the capitalization. That's how much the company is worth. And now I want you to remember these three categories. Large cap, mid cap, small cap. You can think of Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear. I don't know if that helps. Anything $10 billion and up are large cap companies, big companies. There's a subset of this category called mega cap, which is anything above $100 billion. These are the very big companies. The next category are market cap stocks. And they're anywhere from $1 or $2 billion to $10 billion. Now, you have to be careful. Some people categorize mid-cap starting at $1 billion. Some people categorize them at $2 billion. So there's a little room for wiggle there. But $2 to $10 billion. Whereas small-cap stocks, the baby bears, are anywhere from $100 million to $2 billion or so, $1 or $2 billion. Depends on who you talk to. There is a subcategory that I don't care if you remember or not, but below $100 million, you get into this category often called micro-cap stocks. And the mega-cap, the micro-cap, if you remember them, that's great. If you don't, you'll hear them again. You'll hear the term. But remember the Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear. And then the last category are the companies that we shouldn't even discuss in polite company, are the penny stocks, which may be a few hundred thousand or maybe a couple million, but for the most part are scams. Stay away. Don't even think about them. So here is a calculation where we have a stock price that is $20. Do we know if it's a Papa Bear, Mama Bear, Baby Bear by just looking at the price? No. We have to know how many shares are outstanding. So there are 5 million shares of this company. You multiply $20 times 5 million and you get $100 million worth of market capitalization. So this is a small cap stock. For the most part, until you get to the penny stock world, the price is irrelevant. What is important to you is to look at the market cap to see what the value of the company is. Remember Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway refused to split the stock? Exactly. Look at the market cap. People concentrate on the price, but without knowing what the market capitalization is, it's a meaningless number. Slide 83. So here are a couple of mom and pop stores that you may have heard of. Walmart and Target. And by looking at the price as of 5th of February 2015, you may be tempted to think that they're about the same size. But intuitively, right, exactly, you know that Walmart's a whole lot bigger than Target. because what we see is the number of shares outstanding for Walmart are 3.22 billion, while there are only 636.96, 637 million shares of Target. So the market capitalization of Walmart is almost $282 billion. It is indeed a mega cap stock. Now, Target's no slouch at $48.5 billion. It's a large cap Papa Bear company. But it's, what, one sixth or so the size of Walmart? And you intuitively know this, especially if you go overseas, because Walmart is all around the world now. Well, not all around the world, but many places around the world, where Target has basically... They tried to move into Canada and didn't do a very good job. So Target is mostly United States based. Slide 84. There's a couple other companies that you may have heard of. AT&T and Verizon. The companies everybody loves to hate. I hear people complaining about these companies over and over again. I say, why don't you switch? Oh, no, I like them. I say, okay, right. And you say $35 and $49, well, Verizon must be bigger than AT&T, but remember, we have to look at the number of shares outstanding, and it turns out there are 5.19 billion shares of AT&T as of 5th of February 2015, and 4.16 billion shares of Verizon, and so we have a market capitalization. Wow. $181.5 billion, $205.5 billion. Both of them are mega cap stocks, large cap stocks. We often call this situation a duopoly, where AT&T and Verizon have the lion's share together of the business. Sprint, they're doing their best to keep their head above water. And T-Mobile is doing their best to get out of the marketplace. They've been trying to sell themselves to somebody else. We'll see if they're successful. And there are a few other players. But these are the two biggies. Make sense? Okay. And that's one of the things I ask you to look up, is the market capitalization. You don't even have to calculate it. Just look it up. If you want to calculate it, go ahead. Slide 85. Let's end our discussion with some investment strategies. My personal favorite... And again, I tell you my biases up front so you understand where I'm coming from, and then you'll realize that you'll hear other people's biases or whatever you say it. Their strategies. My personal favorite is the buy and hold. You use fundamental analysis. Now, what's that? Relax. We're going to get to that in the next chapter. To identify high-quality companies with good growth prospects and the potential for dividends at reasonable prices. Sometimes people refer to this as value investing. There's that term again. And sometimes they refer to it as GARP, which I think is kind of silly, but growth at a reasonable price. Did you ever read the book, The World According to GARP? They made a movie of it, but the book was really good. Warren Buffett is a very famous buy and hold strategy person. And one time they asked Mr. Buffett, well, Mr. Buffett, you're a buy and hold investor, right? He said, oh, yeah. How long should you hold a company? He said, hold it forever. Now, he was being, again, a bit of a curmudgeon because we don't live forever. But he meant if you owned a pizza shop in the family or you owned a shoe shop or whatever, would you sell it because the value went up a little bit? No, you'd hold on to it and enjoy the fruits of the business rewards. Now, eventually, he's going to give away most of his fortune, but he's having so much fun, he doesn't want to give it away until he's dead. The income strategy, which is yet another very good strategy in my humble opinion, sometimes called equity income. Do you remember the equity income mutual funds from Chapter 4? We emphasize dividends over capital appreciation, ideally looking for the growth of dividends. And as we noted beforehand, and we'll see in the in subsequent presentations, companies that pay consistently growing dividends tend to do well when the market as a whole does poorly. Because dividends don't lie. They're always a positive. In general, income strategy is appropriate for conservative stock investors. Again, nothing to do with liberal versus conservative politics. This strategy works well with dividend reinvestment plans that we discussed in the previous presentation. Stocks which have had histories of consistent dividend increases have often been the market's best long-term investments. I remember one gentleman by the name of Howard Scowl, passed away a few years ago. Very astute, wonderful investor. Ran a company called PrimeCap. He and a few others broke away from American Funds in the early 1980s and started PrimeCap. And they only had a few customers, but one of them is Vanguard. And Vanguard has millions of customers. So, yeah, PrimeCap has done well. And he once said, look, people are interested in having a stock double or quadruple. I want a stock that goes up 100 times. But this takes years. It's not something that's going to happen in 6 months or even 5 years. To have a stock that goes up hundreds of times, you have to hold it for a very long term. And if you go back in time and look at the companies like Clorox, how boring is that? You'll see that they've done over 40, 50 years that kind of increase when you include the dividends, when you compound the dividends. They've had that 50, 100-fold increase by reinvesting the dividends. Very cool. Now, the growth strategy. Here it is, folks. Here are the stars. Everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon as a company is experiencing strong growth. Farcebook, titter. Subsequently, the stock price is bid up to very high levels, and typically these are also the stocks that are the riskiest. When the slightest hint of the slowdown in the growth appears, the second derivative for you math fans, the stock price is often brutally punished. So a growth strategy, these are people who invest in stocks with above average forecast. Of earnings growth. I don't want dividends. No, don't give me dividends. They usually have high price to earnings ratios in expectation of higher earnings in the future. And we've discussed PE ratios, and we'll discuss them again over and over again. Slide 88, the aggressive growth strategy, also known as speculation, short-term trading. Investor aggressively trades in and out of stocks in order to achieve eye-catching returns. Instead of waiting 3 to 5 years, and we'll discuss why 3 to 5 years are a typical holding period for many good investors. Instead of waiting 3 to 5 years for a stock to move, an aggressive stock trader would go after the same investment returns in 6 months to a year, or less, maybe 6 weeks or 6 days. Or 6 minutes. Now, there are companies who are using computers to make millions of trades per day. So, are you thinking you're going to be able to outgun these people? This is the strategy that many people think they are supposed to use when they start investing in stocks. It is fraught with perils and drawbacks, not the least of which are the serious transaction costs that can be generated as a result of frequent trading. Stockbrokers simply adore suckers. Traders, speculators who use this strategy. Why? Because it generates a ton of money for the company and for them as stockbrokers. When you started this class, did you have the idea that you were going to be sitting in front of 3 screens at once, buying and selling? And did you have that idea in your head? Get rid of it. There are some people who make money that way, folks. It is not easy. Most people think they're supposed to do that, and they get an inheritance, and 6 months later it's from 10,000 down to 3,000, and then they give up, or maybe they double down and lose it all in one day. Don't do it. Slide 89, the contrarian strategy. Well, now here's something that we can latch on to. The contrarian strategy is for those who invest in stocks that are out of favor with the market for some reason, for whatever, as reflected by low price-to-earnings ratios and low prices compared to their fundamentals that we'll describe in subsequent chapters. The contrarian investors actively seek stocks from companies with sound financial statements that the market has undervalued. And here is a quote from a very famous contrarian investor. I always try to be accommodating. I buy when others want to sell, and I sell when others want to buy. The problem is, being a contrarian is difficult, since historically the market rises about three times as much as it falls. And so how did Howard Marks, another famous contrarian, categorize his way of investing? It's not a steady business. You have to be willing to sit on your hands and wait until the time is right. Until either people have gone bonkers and bid up prices and then you sell, or you wait until people have run for the hills and then you buy. Because when everybody's making money, do you want to sell? Everybody's running in one direction. Do you want to run the other direction? No, it's not in our human nature. Because 100,000 years ago, when you saw a bunch of people running one way, you ran that way. Because the people sat there and said, ooh, look at those people running that way. They're the ones who got eaten by the tiger. And when they run the other way, exactly. We're creatures that are social and we follow the crowd. But in the finance world, it's not the best thing to do. And we said that Warren Buffett is a famous contrarian investor. And did he live up to his reputation? Oh, yeah. In 2008, when the wheels fell off of the economy, the organic matter hit the ventilating device, as George W. Bush said, this sucker could go down. Can't believe he said that. How presidential. But he was right. You don't say it. You don't say it out loud. You just keep it quiet. Mr. Buffett stepped up to the plate and bought $5 billion worth of Goldman Sachs and $5 billion worth of GE. And then he wound up buying another $5 billion or $10 billion worth of Bank of America. And it turns out they were brilliant moves. Brilliant. But he's a multi-billionaire, right? Exactly. For you and I, worried about losing our jobs, are we going to run in there and buy more shares? Well, yeah. Next month, $50, $100 comes out of your paycheck or your checking account. Makes sense? Indeed, indeed. Be a contrarian. Slide number 90. Three that I call dumb, dumber, and dumbest. Sector rotation. You're supposed to buy stocks in hot sectors and sell the stocks in the stale ones. But your sector is going stale, so you sell and buy in a hot sector that gets stale just as soon as you buy it, and just in time for the sector that was stale that you just sold to now become the hot sector. Yeah. Momentum investing. Buy stocks as they go up, sell stocks as they go down. Often involves selling stocks short, trying to make money when the stock market goes down. This is somewhat akin to aggressive trading, but it's even worse. It uses the greater fool theory. What a great name. Somebody out there is a greater fool than I am. And so even though I am buying high, I will get to sell higher. And I think of this as musical chairs. It's great, folks. When the music's playing, everybody's making money. Remember, some of you probably don't remember, but in 2004, 2005, 2006, when You put out a for sale sign on Thursday, and by Saturday you got five bids, and Sunday you wrote the contract. And the price of your houses just kept getting higher and higher and higher. And this happened in the late 90s with the internet stocks. It's happening now with some of the social networking stocks. Until the music stops playing. Yeah. Now the last one is market timing. If anybody tells you that they know how to time the market, just walk away. Don't try to convince them that they can't do it, because they either know they can't do it and they're just trying to convince you thinking you're gullible, or they've convinced themselves that they can do it and they're worse than just, well, I don't know if it's worse, they're self-deluding. And Bernard Baruch, who was a very famous investor of the mid-20th century, said it best. Don't try to buy at the bottom and sell at the top. It can't be done except by liars. You know, the guy who told you about the fish that got away? Right. And so, here are the investment strategies that I want you to be able to identify. In the face-to-face class, we would say, which strategy do you favor? And because I, you know, basically said that my favorite is buy and hold, lots of people say buy and hold. But buy and hold is very cool, folks. In the face-to-face class, I would now show you a graphic called Keep a Long-Term Perspective. You know, keep perspective. Keep things in perspective. And it shows you that if you look at the market on a month-to-month basis, you'll drive yourself insane. But if you look at it through the years, you'll see that, yes, providing the global economy doesn't fall apart, crack, and dissolve, we've done okay. But there are no guarantees. I always have to add that, don't I? Slide number 92. We are finished with our introduction to stock. We've gone through what are stocks, the different stock markets, and the market indices, transaction costs, a few common characteristics about stocks, and then the different types of stocks and investment strategies. Study this over and over again, dear students. And in our next chapter, we are going to show you some techniques that very few people even know exist, let alone know how to use them. And they are, again, not a guarantee, but they will, in my humble opinion, tilt the odds in your favor so that you will be a long-term successful investor. But first, go back and make sure you know everything there is to know about Chapter 5. See ya!